we'll quickly review what we discussed last week. We had seen that when God gave the Torah, He gave it to Moshe together with laws of inference and laws of logic. And God told Moshe that he's supposed to develop the Torah, as we discussed last week, that God said, this is the Torah, and this is the understanding of the Torah. And beyond this, now we have to use the laws of inference and the laws of logic to derive things from the Torah. We also discussed that Moshe and his court began doing what every court did afterwards, implementing takanot. And we discussed that the period, those 2,000 years, the period from Moshe till the period of the Tanaim, was a period when our sages had such a strong grasp of the written law and the oral law and the tradition in understanding the Torah and the tradition in deriving things from the Torah that if a question arose, they could derive the answer from the Torah. Something that was lost from us in the transition from the Tanaic period to the Amoraic period. That when we reach the Gemara, we're not working that way anymore. The Gemara, when the Gemara has a question, works to derive the answer from the words of the Tanaim, from the words of the Mishnah. The Gemara can no longer say, well, let's derive it from this verse and that verse and put together an answer. The Gemara will very often try to understand how the Tanaim arrived at their conclusions. The Gemara is going to try and understand what was the source in the Tanakh for what the Tanaim said. But to take a question and say, well, today we have cloning. So how do we treat a clone? If you make two clones at once, is it are they siblings? Are they not siblings? A clone of a person? Does he have any relation to a person? What happens if you have a surrogate mother, right? Today you can have a surrogate womb. They take an egg from women Sarah, and they take sperm from Avram, and they put them together in a test tube, and then they put them in Rivka to grow the fetus, and then Rivka bears the child. Whose child is it? The egg came from Sarah, and the woman who bore him is Rivka. So whose child is it? And halachically, it makes a difference. I mean, there are halachic implications here. Who are his siblings? So these are complicated questions that we're facing today. And unfortunately, for the last almost 2,000 years, we no longer have the ability to look at the Torah and arrive at the conclusion from the Torah. If a person goes to the moon, so when is it sunrise? When is it sunset? When is it Shabbos? Today, that's a real question. Ilan Ramon had that question. So, ideally, we should have people who are on the level that they could go back to the text and derive from the text what the answer is. We don't have that. We haven't had that for nearly 2,000 years. In order to arrive at answers to new questions, so sometimes we can derive the answer from the sources we have, from the Mishnah, from the Gemara. Today, I was just at a bar mitzvah today. So after breakfast, everyone went and took stacks of bread and cheese and started making themselves lunch to take for the road. Now, are they allowed to do that or not? So everyone said, yeah, sure, you're allowed to do that. They're serving us the bread. If I want to take another sandwich for breakfast, I could, right? So I'll take five sandwiches for me and my kids. What's wrong with that? So I went to the front desk and I said, how much is it if I want to make a sandwich to take for lunch for my kids, if I want to make sandwiches? So they gave me an astronomical figure. They said, eight shekel a sandwich. Sandwich, talking about two slices of bread. Yeah, two slices of bread and jam. So I said, eight shekel a sandwich? No, I could buy a loaf of bread for nine shekel. Talking about two slices of bread. They said, yeah, that's our price. So one of the other guests who had taken large packs of bread for his children came along and said, that's ridiculous. Part of the goodwill, we're spending a lot of money here. We were a big group here for Shabbos. Of course the hotel wants to give us the food. So I said, what do you mean goodwill? They're telling us that they want money for this bread. You don't want to pay them money. Don't take the bread. How could you decide they have goodwill? So he said, no, of course, that's the way it works. What do you mean that's the way it works? I don't know. I tried arguing with him, and he was convinced he's right. So that, even though in Chazal's time, they didn't have this scenario, but they did have other scenarios, and they gave us the guidelines how we decide in monetary issues, what's permitted and what's forbidden. So today, we don't ride on oxen, and we don't have our oxen going through the streets. But our sages gave us the rules, the rules from which we know what the halacha would be. What happens if your brake fails and your car goes rolling down and smashes into someone's house? So you parked your car, the brakes fail. Are you responsible when your objects do damage or not? So we have tractates that discuss how responsible we are, what precautions we have to take, when am I responsible, when am I not responsible. So even though these specific things didn't exist in our sages' time, when it comes to these issues, they gave us the rules and the guidelines from which we can derive what the halacha is today. But some questions are totally new, such as going to the moon, such as what?
Do they have halacha for it?
For what? So for the going to the moon and the surrogate mother, we have to have certain halachos because we have to say, is it permissible or not?
Yeah, don't go to the moon.
Can a married woman take this this fetus and take it in, or is it considered like she's living with someone else? So all of this is discussed. If you guys want to come to my house, I have a big set like this that volumes that discuss this and what we do in halacha.
They want to know now. Well done.
So I don't know the answer. I don't know the answer. I don't know. I have volumes that I haven't read yet. What? When will I know? Probably in about 10-15 years. I don't think I'll know it in the near future. I need to know a lot more in order to know that. You could ask whatever you want, so long as you aren't asking a question that you're going to act upon the answer you're given. If it's just because you want to know, so ask wherever you want. The more qualified the person, the more likely it is that the answer you get is accurate.
So who wrote these books?
This is a whole institute that works on the halachos in these modern day questions. But a lot of these questions we have to go stringently upon. We have to say, for example, we might say that legally we don't know whose child this child is. And so we'll say he's forbidden to marry siblings from any one of the parents, the surrogate mother or the other mother or the other father. We don't know. I don't know what they say. But very often, if we'd have the ability to go back to the text, if we'd have that knowledge, then we could derive a more finite answer. And sometimes we have to just go to be more stringent because we don't have the answer. Oh, right. So that's another question. Is he a Kohen? Is he a Levi? Is he a Yisrael? Right? Is he a Jew? Well, maybe he's a new creation. Who's... Ah, yeah. If what happens if one of the mothers is not Jewish?
Well, the main mother.
And what happens when... Okay, so we can invent many questions. But bottom line, we just brought these as examples for new questions that arise. And to these new questions, some of them, the answer would really have to come from the text of the Tanakh. You need someone who can derive it from there. And we don't have that for well over 1,000 years now.
What if it's a lesbian couple?
So Thursday nights, we have this Thursday night, Bezalel Hashem, you can ask whatever you want. It doesn't mean you'll get an answer, but you could definitely ask. But now, moving on. So we said that we have the Gemara and the analysis of the Mishnah and the halachos in the Gemara, and then the analysis of what the bottom line in the Gemara is, and we discussed the Rishonim, and then we went on to discuss the Shulchan Aruch. And where we left off is from the Shulchan Aruch on. In our last class we summarized from Moshe till the Shulchan Aruch. And now we're holding by the Shulchan Aruch. So the Shulchan Aruch was generally accepted in the land throughout. The Jewish people generally accepted that the halacha is what it says in Shulchan Aruch. There are a few exceptions. You have certain Yemenite communities that never accepted the Shulchan Aruch. They go with the Rambam. Their rabbi was the Rambam, Maimonides. And you have the difference between Ashkenazim and Sephardim, whether we do like Shulchan Aruch or the Ramah. And we discussed that the difference between Shulchan Aruch and Ramah lies on 2 points primarily. One is going to be custom, where the Ramah defines for us Ashkenazi custom and the Shulchan Aruch Sephardi custom. And we said there was another difference between them halachically, and that was that Shulchan Aruch always wants to take best of three between Rambam, Rif, and Rosh, and Ramah says that the Tosafists were greater power because they came after the Rambam, they saw Maimonides' works, And if they still disagreed with him, so they were great, great rabbis, and they were a great number, and therefore we're going to go with the Tosafists as opposed to the Rambam and the Rif. And that's why sometimes he'll go with the Rush, and that's the Ashkenazi custom. Now, since the Shulchan Aruch, what's left for us is basically to learn the Shulchan Aruch and learn the sources of the Shulchan Aruch, going back from the Mishnah to the Gemara to the Rishonim, Rambam, Rif, Rush, to the Tur, Beis Yosef, to the Shulchan Aruch, and the commentaries on the Shulchan Aruch. And then when we understand why the Shulchan Aruch rules as he does, so then we can derive what the halacha is going to be in many questions that face us today. Rabbi Shapiro, chief rabbi of Israel, he once said that in general, out of 100 questions that a rabbi gets, maybe one of them, the answer is in Shulchan Aruch. Because most of the questions you get, that exact question is not addressed in Shulchan Aruch. Most of the questions that arise, there are many aspects to the question, and you have to know how to derive the halacha for that specific question from the Shulchan Aruch. It's not just that question. It's very often there are many aspects to the question, and when you understand the source behind the Shulchan Aruch, then you understand how to apply it. Now, when we read the Shulchan Aruch, so we don't always know what the Shulchan Aruch meant. Let's take a simple example. We have the laws of Chol HaMoed, right? We have Sukkos, first day Sukkos, last day Sukkos. In the middle, we have Chol HaMoed. We have days that have certain level of holiness. On the other hand, we're allowed to do certain work on those days. Same thing Pesach. We have first day, last day, and the days in between. The prohibition of doing labor on those days, is it biblical or rabbinic? Unclear. We read the Shulchan Aruch. It's unclear what the Shulchan Aruch meant to say. So different opinions will say different things. There are different understandings of how to understand what the Shulchan Aruch himself wrote. The Shulchan Aruch in the Beis Yosef quotes opinions, and then what was his bottom line? So, depends on who you ask. A person comes from Chutz Arts to Israel, right? You guys are here. Do you keep 2 days Yom Tov or 1 day Yom Tov? Different opinions, depends on who you ask. So, the Shulchan Aruch addressed it a little bit in the Beis Yosef, but in the Shulchan Aruch we don't really see bottom line answer. And again, the rabbis have to look at the sources, research, and then come up with an answer. So what's left for us to do since the Shulchan Aruch is to learn the same material, the same text, the Mishnah, the Gemara, the Rishonim, but now we add to that the responsibility to know what the Shulchan Aruch says and the major commentaries after the Shulchan Aruch, be it the Magen Avraham, the Taz, the Gra, the Mishnah Brura. So today, in order to come up with bottom line halacha, it's much more difficult because you have to know a lot more. You walk into Machon Meir and you open Chumash for the first time. You open a Mishnah for the first time. You got to know how to run your lives. You have to know what to do in halacha. And that's why it's recommended that we take shortcut books. There are books that do shortcuts. Rabbi Greenwald's book, what's it called? That gray book in halacha? That of Sperling, I think, teaches Shari Halacha. So that's a very good book in English that summarizes Halacha for you. So at least you begin, you have a basis to know what am I supposed to do on a day-to-day basis. Shari Halacha is very good because he brings examples from modern-day scenarios. He'll discuss radios, he'll discuss showers, he'll discuss everything that's cars, everything that's relevant today. If you want an overview of halacha, so then it's good to cover the Kitzur Shulchan Aruch. Again, this won't give you the ability to give halachic ruling, but it'll give you the basic understanding of halacha. It'll give you an introduction. It's a shortcut. It's a shortcut safer. But it's good, because this way you'll get an overall picture. I feel that one of the things every person should establish for himself is the goal to cover the Kitzur Shulchan Aruch when he's here. You're here for a month, you're here for 3 months, it doesn't matter. Try to cover it. If you can't cover all of it, cover a nice part of it. So, what?
How many books?
The Kitzur Shulchan Aruch. Some printings it's one volume, some printings it's two volumes, some printings it's more. Cover it if you understand Hebrew and Hebrew, and if not, probably better off in English. Go through it in your spare time. This way you'll know basic halacha. You'll know if you have a non-Jewish roommate that you have an issue about using his dishes, because dishes need tvi'as kelim. You know that you have an issue about using his dishes, because if a vessel was used with non-kosher food, so we say that part of the taste is absorbed into the walls of the vessel, and every time you pour anything hot into that vessel, so it comes back out into the flavor, goes back into that hot beverage or hot salad. You'll know that on Shabbos, you'll learn how you make tea. You're not allowed to cook things on Shabbos. So how do you make tea on Shabbos? You'll know that there's an issue with putting things on a plata, taking things off a plata. You'll know that now we're entering the 3 weeks. You're not allowed to shave or take a haircut, so you got to get your haircut and shave before the 3 weeks, before Shiva Asar B'Tamuz. Shiva Asar B'Tamuz is coming up in about a week and a half. So that's why it's a good idea to start going through the Kitzur Shulchan Aruch, so you get familiar with the halachos. You'll know you're not supposed to walk around 4 footsteps without a yarmulke. The shower, you could go obviously without a kippah, but after the shower, you're not supposed to walk around without a kippah. You'll know there are laws of modesty.
Is
a person.
Keep,
so?
Just get
some
lashes. Just get lashes.
Okay. you'll know that a chumash is supposed to go on top of a mishnah, and that we don't leave sparim upside down. There are basic halachot, and when a person walks to Machon Meir, it's very common that people come in and they're shaving with a razor. They don't know that it's prohibited to shave with a razor. People come in, they don't know they're not allowed to have tattoos. So there are many halachot, and it's very difficult to cover all of it. So I'm giving examples from different areas of Shulchan Aruch. You cover the Kitzur Shulchan Aruch. You'll have a good basic idea of halacha. We'll give you
what part is it where it says the haircut? Like,
the laws of cutting hair?
Yeah, between which, like, not with the ratio, like, for holiday, what?
3 weeks.
So, like, 3 weeks, you can't cut your hair?
Well, the Kitzur Shulchan Aruch goes in the order of the year. So you could learn it now and see the order of the year.
And
not another.
Before Shavuos, too.
An honor, right? During that period, we also don't take haircuts. Correct. There's a difference. Kitzur Shulchan Aruch is for Ashkenazim. There are Kitzur Shulchan Aruch for Sephardim, but I don't know if they have any in English.
When's the cutoff date to cut hair this week?
Just a second.
Tuesday is that fast day.
So it's before Tuesday. Whenever the Shiva Asar B'Tamuz, the fast is, so you have to get your hair cut and shaved before that.
It's not this Tuesday.
It's next Tuesday. Okay, so it's before next Tuesday.
Right.
I don't have...
Monday,
I wouldn't leave it for the last
before
minute.
Before the fast or on the fast?
Before the fast. Before the fast. Right.
So, before 25-hour fast?
No.
From sunrise. 72-hour fast.
Right. So Shiva Asar B'Tamuz falls out on Tuesday, so you have to get your haircut before sunset of Monday.
Monday night?
Before Monday evening. Okay?